Got to go out there and start hanging out with the people that bring you up.
Find someone to open up to, find someone to talk to, find someone to connect with.
That was a moment for me where I said, I'm never going to complain about shit ever again.
To everyone out there, know that you're not alone.
But I promise you, we will adapt because that's what we do really well as humans.
This is the Coaches Council. We are six elite coaches dedicated to serving and ending personal struggle for high performers in business, health, and relationships. As a collective, we have built and helped build 6-, 7-, and 8-figure businesses, dominated multiple industries, coached and played in pro sports leagues, and developed the strongest, most intimate relationships. This isn't your average podcast. It's for the hungry, the dedicated, the doers, for those that have a dream and truly want that dream to become their everyday reality. Those that want to take action, leave their ego at the door, and own every level of their life. If that's you, then step into the Coaches Council as we rewrite the truths to living a high-performance life. Welcome back to another week of the Coaches Council. This is a bit of a heavy one here this week. With everything that's going on, and it's not often talked about because it's something that opens us up to a little bit of vulnerability. And I know for myself, I've had a long struggle with depression. And I know there's other people here that have anxiety, have suffered through anxiety, and whether they've done it in the quiet of their home or really opened it up and been able to share it with the world. But I'm so passionate about this topic because it really is something that affected me to a great deal, and to a point where I have to thank the Lord every day for being present on this day. And I'm really just going to open it up to you guys to see where have you guys suffered from things of that same nature, and when we're in a time like this. I know we talked about it last week in terms of the situation of the economy and what it's doing to people's anxiety and depression levels, and the ability to talk about it and bring it forth. But who has dealt with it, and ultimately, what can we do from a community standpoint and an outreach standpoint to serve and help support those that are really going through it?
Yeah, I can start. So the first thing is that you need to talk to a doctor. At the end of the day, we are not medical professionals, and we're going to share our experiences, but please go to your physician. The great thing is that telemedicine is available to all of us. We can, hopefully it's available to all of us. I know it's available to quite a few of us, and you can go to hopefully your primary physician, and hopefully they won't tell you just to go on drugs, and hopefully they will give you some guidance. For me, I'll simplify it because it's an incredibly complex thing, but I'll simplify the anxiety struggles and solution that I found were twofold. To simplify it is to get out. One, to get out physically outside, and more importantly, to get out of your own head. If you sit there and you worry, you're, to use a little phrase here, you're letting your anxiety engine rev. Your mind is racing and your wheels are spinning. And I spent one day pacing for 11 hours across a 400 square foot condo. And then I checked myself into the emergency room on the worst day of my anxiety. And as soon as I stepped outside, I felt better. As soon as I started talking to the cab driver and telling him to take me to the hospital, I felt better. As soon as I talked to the admissions officer at the hospital, I felt better. As soon as I talked to the nurse, I was, you know, quote unquote, cured of it. So it will be embarrassing for you, and that's okay. We've all been embarrassed, and understand that embarrassment is the least of your worries when going through an anxiety attack, or should be at least one of the least of your worries. So find somebody who you can trust and talk to them about how you feel. And if you don't get a good vibe from them, move on to somebody else. But you do need to talk it out. You do need to journal. And then the last thing I'll say is that in terms of simple acts that gave me a very acute relief from anxiety, nothing has beat very deep breathing. So it could be as simple as 4 seconds in, 6 seconds out, repeated. You should feel, provided you're not having a full-blown anxiety attack, you should feel the weight of the world start to come off your shoulders after a couple minutes. Another one is 4 seconds in and a 7-second hold and an 8-second exhale. to change over to from the sympathetic nervous system, which drives the adrenaline and the release of that causes the anxiety, to something called the parasympathetic nervous system, which slows you down. I mean, this is books upon books and videos upon videos, but those are some places to start. And just understand you're okay. I like to say there's nothing wrong with you. There is, kind of, sort of, but you're going to be okay if you continue to persist and keep on looking for solutions.
The Coach's Council is powered by Cannae Brands, an all-natural, pure CBD company without THC that encompasses our passion for health, wellness, and fitness. Visit CannaeBrands.com and use promo code TOGETHER30 to enhance your wellness journey. And I think people need to know too, they're not alone. They're not alone in this. That was, I think, the biggest thing for me when I was going through it. And I went through a number of therapists from the age of 14 through 22 that took me through some of those darkest times of my life. And I forever thought that I was the only person. And until I started talking about it and sharing my story and really owning it, to be honest with you, and open up a certain level of vulnerability, I started to realize that that story resonated with a lot of other people. And I think, especially in today's world, we throw those terms around and those jokes around of, oh, I'm depressed today, or oh, I'm having an anxiety attack, or I'm so anxious. And these feelings come and go, and we really don't know what they are or how they're feeling. And I know being at home, we feel things that we've never felt before. And Drew, what is it that you've felt and experienced since being at home with two girls, running a business, and on a lot of days, not even being able to go outside?
Yeah, that's a good question. Obviously, I am at home with my daughters, and it can make things more difficult, but I think that's a good question for a lot of people. I think for me personally, I think everyone here has been through their own rock bottom experience. For me, I developed a survival technique since I was a kid to act like things were okay on the outside, though. And I'm a huge believer in Brené Brown's work, where she talks about shame and how much power shame has over us when we don't talk about it. So like Craig was saying, if we keep it in, we don't tell anyone, that shame has more power over us. And so for the first step would be to find someone to open up to, find someone to talk to, find someone to connect with that understands your struggle. And you'll find that the more you talk about those things that tend to bring you shame or you don't want to tell other people, you realize it has less and less power over you. The problem, I believe, in our society is that, especially as men, we're taught to not show emotions, not show weaknesses, and we're taught to suppress those feelings. If we have emotions, we just kind of man up and suck it up and then push those feelings down further and further and further until, for me personally, it broke me. So for me, what that looked like for me was I went through a divorce and left my religion that I grew up with thinking was 100% true at the same time. And that was my rock bottom moment. But like I said, this was all during Fit to Fat to Fit. So a lot of people don't know this, but we were struggling internally, but we would have to go on TV shows like Jay Leno and Dr. Oz and act like we were this happy couple and things were okay. To go through those two things at the same time, which really shape your identity, right? Marriage and religion, you know, that's a huge part of people's identity. For me, I kind of went through a transition of both of those at the same time. The things that helped me overcome that I think are applicable to a lot of people today is we all come, you know, to the table with tools that we've been given, whether from society, culture, religion, family, friends, tools to help us overcome certain hardships in our life. And for me, the thing that I had to realize was that I didn't have the necessary tools in my tool belt at that time. So I had to go outside my comfort zone, outside my knowledge of the tools that I had, and be okay with these things that I thought was maybe a little bit weird or taboo, like meditation, talking to a therapist, seeing a life coach, talking to a doctor, you know, things that I didn't have those tools before. And I'm like, okay, I'm willing to try something because the tools that I've used didn't help me past this point. And so being open to things that are out of your comfort zone that you might think are a little bit taboo or weird, I would say be open to those things, especially if you do feel desperate, like nothing's working. Be open to new things that could open up your perspective and shift your perception of your situation. And for me, that's what pulled me out of you know, my dark place, and continues to this day. I'm still open to new ideas and new techniques that could help me better my situation, because these times that we're going through right now are uncharted territory for all of us as humans. Like, we haven't been through this situation, so we don't know how to just adapt to this, you know, the first day. So, but I promise you, we will adapt, because that's what we do really well as humans.
Yeah, if I could just add to that, that was awesome, Drew. And I just want to share my story here. And I suffered from depression when I was in university, when I was about 19 years old. And part of that was because I went from the sunny place, Craig would probably know, Kelowna, British Columbia, to living in Vancouver, where it rains 5 months out of the year. And I was spending basically my mornings to my evenings in school. And I was coming back, and I was literally getting dropped off at the bus stop at 11 o'clock at night and going to McDonald's and eating. At that time, they had supersized fries and like the McChickens on for 99 cents. So I would get supersized fries, two of them, and two McChickens, go to sleep. And within, I think, 2.5 months or 3 months, I gained like 45 pounds. So it was absolutely
keto friendly.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely not fun. And then I would find myself going to sleep at five or like six on Friday night, waking up Saturday morning, taking a shower, going to sleep all day Saturday, waking up Sunday morning, going to sleep all day Sunday. So this became a pattern. And here's what happened. It was, I just had some great friends that finally said, Pradeep, you got to break out of it. And it wasn't to the point where they laughed, because we were in the locker room and they said, hey, Pradeep, your underwear is looking like a thong now. You've gained so much weight. So it was something that kicked me out of it. But here's something that I realized was, A, loneliness, and you know, Craig talked about this, that will beat you down. You got to go out there and start hanging out with the people that bring you up. Obviously, it's a little bit more difficult now, but I see people having virtual parties these days through Zoom and other platforms. I think that's an opportunity for you to actually interact with people. Family's been shown, obviously, to help. Nature, you guys talked about. Faith, meditation, as well as gratitude. I think those are the things. But the biggest thing that really kept me out was a routine. Was getting up and saying, okay, I just got to follow that routine, because if I follow the routine, I wouldn't sit there stagnant just thinking about things. And a big reason why a lot of us get into that state of anxiety or depression is because it's what we're focusing on. And it comes down to contrast, because everything that we live by or do day in, day out, our thoughts, is based on contrast. So if we're in a happy mood, it's because we're comparing it to maybe a time when we weren't happy. Or we're feeling good about something because we just came out of a situation where it wasn't so good. So I had to change what I focused on. And I think it's so important right now for us to take a look at what we're focusing on. And even for me, I know it's a struggle, because in the evenings, for example, I get wiped out because I'm on calls with business owners that are crying. They're like, you know, we're going to lose our house. We're going to lose our business. How am I going to feed my kids? And these are grown men. And I can't help but take this emotion on, because you just do that when you're there talking to people. And then in the evenings, I'm just completely wiped. And then I have to sit there and just have some gratitude and say, thank you. You know, I have the opportunity to sit here with my family. I'm cooped up with my family, but that's okay, because, you know, I enjoy being around my family. So I think it just comes down to what we focus on and having contrast. Just one other thing too, I just want to throw in there. In 2006, my perception of life completely changed. And that was when I went to India. And my parents we went as a family. My brother went, I went, my parents, and we went there. My brother, within the first week, was just like, get me the heck out of here. He was ready to book his ticket back. He was literally like, I'm moving. He's like, I'm going back. I said, just hang in there. You know what? This will be an interesting trip. But this is what we saw. If you haven't seen the movie Slumdog Millionaire, take a look at that. Because that is true. We were out there, and this moment has changed. We'll never forget it, where this young child, I couldn't even tell if it was a boy or a girl, was crawling on his or her, on their torso, had no arms and no legs, begging for food. That was a moment for me where I said, I am never going to complain about shit ever again. And so it's not that I don't complain, but I always go back to that and say, that moment just sets me in check, because I go back and say, where's my life at compared to that person? I'm doing pretty good. So I think that will help us moving forward as well with this.
We've touched on it so much here, and I keep going to this level of vulnerability that as men, we have such a hard time opening up to. And we put on this front, like Drew talked about, that everything's okay, that we're not supposed to show emotion, that if we show emotion, it's a sign of weakness. And that's You talk to any therapist, you talk to anybody who's ever done any type of deep intrinsic work, and that's that natural fear that it all comes back to, is showing weakness and not being able, we're not able to provide, we're not able to do all these things that as a quote unquote man should be able to do. And you've talked about this so much, John, in being able to own who you are and really be able to show your true colors. And that is in itself the definition of strength. That in and of itself is definition of, for lack of a better words, being a man. And I'm curious for you just to kind of dive in on that and what it does from a psyche point of view from anxiety and depression.
Sure. I think it's probably worth, for the sake of framing the conversation, to recognize that there are different variations of these conditions. With depression, for example, there's what's called situational depression, which can affect just about anyone, and it is usually a response to a specific thing that is happening at the moment. And so you lose your job, like all of the things that we are going through right now with the pandemic, people will fall into situational depressions. Then there are more clinical depressions, which happen pretty much irrespective of circumstance. And I went through one in 2013. Everything in my life was outwardly perfect. I had just gotten married. I moved to California. You become the stepfather to a great kid. Had a book on the bestseller list with a $1 million deal. Like, things were going well. I was killing it. And all I wanted to do was like crawl in a hole and die, to the extent that like that accelerated and I made an attempt on my life. And so when there are things in your life that are happening that are bad, like I think like really accepting that some of those things directly need addressing can be really, really helpful for reducing these things. When there are no immediately outward signs, that's when you really have to start doing deeper work and asking yourself, asking yourself like why this might be happening, and it could be with revisiting trauma. I was once told that anxiety and depression came from the same place, the same type of wound, and the anxiety tends to be a future based stress response, where because of that wound and something that's happened or your circumstances, you're worried about the future. And depression, on the other hand, you tend to be worried about or dwelling in the past. I've also heard that depression is anger turned inward. And all of this goes back to what everyone else has said so far, which is these emotions, the experience of feeling them cannot be bottled up. They need to be expressed outwardly. And whether you call it vulnerability or authenticity or living your truth, the fact is that sitting in shame, and that is, and to touch on what Drew said in the work of Brené Brown, that's usually the driver behind why we keep these things secret. And there is a huge societal push for men to be strong because we fear being judged. For people to, you know, that you don't want the thing, people to know the thing you feel or the thing that made you feel it. And what I try to give people in terms of a practical step is understand that while that fear exists, it was implanted in you by society, it tends to stick around because of your original community. So there's something called proximity bias, and that is where you have certain biases against the people close to you. It normally manifests itself with regard to expertise, right? If somebody you know becomes an expert in something, it's difficult for you to accept that expertise because you knew them before they had it. And so you're more likely to accept advice from a total stranger. Similarly, there's something called role lock, where we have a difficult time separating from our behaviors or our identity when we are surrounded by people who are accustomed to us behaving or identifying in a certain way, which is why when you like go away to college for the first time and you're around an entirely new group of people, you're free to like sort of express who you are in a different way than your high school friends, right? You no longer have to be like the nerdy kid who shit his pants in third grade, and now you just get to be the cool kid who shows up on day one. And this applies to both anxiety and depression in that when you are beginning to express these things, it is often helpful to start with strangers. It is so much easier to be vulnerable in front of a stranger
than in front of someone that you know. Because deep down, shame comes from this intrinsic and very real fear of altering the perception in a way that is now unalterable, and this person has to remain in your life. So once you confess, like, hey, I was sexually abused as a child, if you confess that to your best friend, that you can't unring that bell. That person who you see every day and who is very, very important in your life now knows that about you. And however that changes your perception, that person being in your life every day, that's the fear. Whereas if you talk to a therapist who is a stranger, it is easier. And for me, the combination of distance, of you know, like emotional and community distance of being with strangers, but also like commiseration and understanding has been tremendously helpful. And so when I really began taking ownership of the sexual abuse I experienced as a child, I began going to support groups for adult survivors of childhood sexual abuse. And long before I could come out to my family or my friends or my audience, it was easier to speak to this group of people because whatever they thought of me didn't matter. I was never going to see them again. I was never going to experience, like, you know, whatever judgments they might have had to me, whatever I imagined, whatever I created in my head, was ultimately immaterial because once I left that room, I just went back to my regular life and I got to still be the person who I thought I needed to be. And then over time, the experience of sharing it at all got, I became more accustomed to it. Those grooves got greased. And then from there, I was able to share it with the people with whom I felt safest. And it was people in my life who were sort of not the closest, whom I told first. And the people who I told last was actually my family, because I obviously had great fear that revealing this stuff about something that had happened within the family would cause upset and there was shame there. Whereas, you know, my friends, obviously they don't have attachment to the family structure and the fact that this was my great uncle perpetrating this, and they just got to be there for me as my friends. And so the practical tip I will give everyone is if you are not in a position to be able to afford regular counseling, then join a support group. And to Craig's earlier point, telemedicine and teleconferencing are available for everyone. There are all sorts of groups now starting up for very specific things, whether it is anxiety in the time of COVID, or whether it is, you know, men suffering from depression, whether it is men needing support from other men in terms of how to step up and be leaders in this time of crisis. All of those things are popping up, and you will find invariably that revealing yourself, revealing your weakness, is easier to a stranger or group of strangers than to people in your immediate community, because our fear is all about how those people will judge us and how that might alter the relationships upon which we're placing so much value. And we don't have that with strangers. And that's just a tremendous help to me. So going to support groups made it easier over time to develop the comfort talking about it, which then made it easier to reveal. So if you are struggling with depression, find groups or find places where you can put that without quote unquote consequence in how it'll affect your quote real life. And then over time you can bring that in.
That's such great advice. And that's honestly what I've started to find within our Own It groups and our Own It retreats. And what we have is people open up in ways that they've never been able to open up before. And they come in as one person, are able to leave a completely different one. And I know, Brian, you've got your Rise Up retreats, and I'm sure you've got similar examples of that. But what is it that John talks about that you can relate to, that sense of community, and what happens to the from, be it situational anxiety, situational depression, to something that's more clinical, obviously needing more medical direction, but that you see with people coming in when that community starts to find that bond?
Yeah, and everything, you know, John said, you're spot on, man. I mean, when I was going through this stuff in college, it was teachers that I was sneaking into their classrooms in after my football buddies had gone. I'm supposed to be this badass football player, this jock, this dude, this guy who's got it all figured out, cool kid. And I'm like, I'm fucking hurting right now. I don't know who I am. I'm lost. And I'm talking in like the rec therapy with Miss Susie Ross, and she's like sending me to these guys' houses in the hills and doing all this chakra stuff on me. I mean, I would never tell any of my buddies at the time. And, but it's so true. You don't have, we're worried about the shame, right? And the shame comes from the people we know. And John, you just eloquently said it so perfectly. So I wouldn't even like try to say it again, because you're so beautiful with your words, brother. I'm honoring you for that. But one of the biggest things that I found of all these things, you know, is first starting with a place of forgiveness, daily forgiveness, you know, forgiving myself to even have these thoughts and not, you know, because the judgment comes in, we judge, there's shame and stuff. And just for like, even to this day, you know, I got to forgive myself for getting into that state. And I'm, you know, people think, oh man, you just wake up so positive every day. You know, I do that because I actually don't fucking wake up so positive every single day. That's the reason why I set an intention of the day, because I don't just jump out of bed and skip and dance, is because my mind isn't. So now I know, at least I know now how to counteract it at the start of the day, because I know if I don't start it at the beginning of the day, I'm fucked throughout the rest of the day. Like I'm screwed, because for me, I'm going to win or lose my day by the way I operate, by how I start it. So to Craig's point, so true. Motion creates emotion. Like you got to move. If I haven't moved early on, it's going to be tough for me to like change my state throughout the rest of the day, you know? And so everybody has their different kind of ways of operating that kind of shift really their state of emotion. But one of the biggest things I always want to go back to is first the state of forgiveness. Forgive yourself often. When you mess up, which you will mess up, we're all going to mess up. I mess up all the time. Don't place, man, you should have done this. Aren't you a better leader of this? You should be home right now with your daughter right now. You freaking, you know, it's like a double edge. I'm trying to save my company, and then I feel like an asshole for not being with my daughter right now. My wife is working full time and she's taking care of stuff. And I feel like a bad husband. And so there's this counter back and forth where you feel like you're helping, but then you also feel like you're dropping the ball on other aspects. And then you drop the ball here and you're like, dude, what about your employees? You got to like make sure that they have livelihood and a job and take care of them. Why'd you go on a bike ride for 30 minutes with your daughter today? You should have been innovating. And so there's this like pendulum of like shit, you know, like the things that you go through. And that's why I say forgiveness. I forgive myself like 20 times a day. Like, it's okay. This, you're doing the best you can do right now. This is okay. Like, don't beat yourself up, man. Like, you got this. And so, because ultimately, you know, the opposite end of anxiety or depression is peace, right? That's ultimately what we all strive for. And it's hard. It's a hard path to that. And so, yes, with retreats, with why I think our retreats are so powerful and these social groups or these things like that, is because like our people come in to like our retreats or these groups, they don't know each other. So they're so open, they're so vulnerable, because they know their wife isn't going to say anything. All to John's points is so true. And so everything here is like literally the perfect advice, starting with what Craig said first. Seek professional help if it's to that point. That is like the buy-in first. And then these are all just strategies that each one of us have dealt with. So but that would be what I'm throwing into the pot is forgiveness, because I got to do that every single day.
Guys, I mean, it's something that absolutely cripples people, and it's something that people feel like they're suffering in silence. And I love the fact that we're opening it up to everybody. I love the fact that we are bringing it to everybody. And you've heard it from every single person on here. We are all coaches. We are all people who are serving other people. And every single one of us has had a story. Every single one of us deals with this. Every single one of us has had it affect our life in a major way. And at the end of the day, that might be why we're in the places that we are and we're serving in the ways that we do. But to everyone out there, know that you're not alone. Know that there are people who care for you, who love you, who want to see you succeed and want to see you through this part of your life. So like we said, seek medical attention first, but after that, seek fellowship, seek forgiveness, and seek others. With that, stay hungry, stay humble, and we'll see you next week.